Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Vasilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 271, being recorded on the 22nd of March, 2019, with special guests Heiko Ulrich and Ratish Ravikumar. I'm Sujit, and on Teams with me, I have Cynthia, Kendall, Kale, and of course, our special guests, who we're going to get to in just a minute. But before that, let's just talk about some of the news in the Azure space. So let's see. You guys put a whole bunch of links in the show notes. Who wants to go first?
So I can jump in, and I'll do one that I didn't put in there. I don't think we've covered this before, but Azure Kubernetes Service Cluster Autoscalers in preview. And so this is definitely going to solve a lot of issues for some of our customers who want to scale more quickly based on their workloads. So I think that this is a really good update in the Kubernetes space, especially when it comes to AKS. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, actually, that's one that I've used recently, and I think our guest, one of our guests, Heiko, I'm sure has also had some experience with it. It's a really cool thing. The only one thing you remember that you need to have the VMSS version of the autoscaler installed, so not the regular version. So that's one thing to keep in mind when you set that up. Good one, though. Cynthia, I noticed you had something on DevOps as well.
Yeah, there is the Sprint 149 update. A couple things that I thought was very interesting was that now there is the Azure boards have support for GitHub Enterprise. I think that's one of the later ones that we put in, and this is where people use GitHub on-prem. So now we finally have support for that, and something that I remember was very painful when I was using Azure DevOps was that you're unable to edit your comments. So whenever I did something wrong or typed in something wrong, then I have to add in another comment. But now you're able to actually edit those. And now for people that are using the free agents, they're now able to run for 60 minutes instead of 30 minutes. So now if you're timing out at 30 minutes, you actually have 30 extra minutes to run. So now there's more people that are able to stay with the free agent instead of going to a private agent. And one other thing I thought was cool was that now you're able to approve the deployments directly from Slack. I know we talk a lot about how we are a embracer of the open source and other systems. And this is really just a proof of how we are really trying to integrate a number of things beyond just the Microsoft stack. And we'll include in the show notes, there's a couple more that came with the Sprint update. But as always, Azure DevOps is just exciting.
Good to hear that. Kale, what do you have in there?
Yeah, you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you just fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, so the one, the couple things I put in here this week, non-blockchain related, but it's okay, is one about Microsoft GameStack, which is kind of a new way of kind of bringing together a bunch of different technologies. So it's things such as obviously Azure. There's a lot of work from the PlayFab guys, which was an acquisition that the Game Studios had made a while back. Some of our core stuff around graphics engines, around DirectX and Visual Studio, and all the different pieces that kind of make up putting together, you know, whether it's a small game or some AAA studio. This is really the conglomeration or bringing all those together kind of in a single pane of glass. I mean, it's kind of coming together as part of this Project X Cloud, which is a streaming technology for next generation gaming. And there's a nice post written up here about, you know, specifically the stuff around PlayFab and what they're bringing to the table around, you know, some of the matchmaking capabilities, the parties, and all the different, you know, hard areas that people have kind of figured out over the years how to kind of refine and make them kind of Lego building blocks to make these next generation games. So it's a pretty cool kind of setup there now that we have kind of brought all under one roof. And it's pretty something I think our listeners should take a look at. The other thing was around IoT Central. So we talk about IoT a lot on the podcast. And this is a, I wouldn't call it a small update. It's something that if you are in this space, specifically if you're using IoT Central, there were some restrictions around things you could do with jobs. For instance, you could create jobs that targeted specific devices, but you know, you had to kind of recreate those each time. So now they have an option that allows you to copy them, you know, and basically be able to download them, you know, those job details so that you can more easily create jobs and manage them. So it's a pretty cool little small piece that's been added to IoT Central.
That's great, yeah. And I have a couple of updates that actually Evan posted, but since he's not here, I'll cover them. And they happen to be in a service that I like a lot, which is Azure Security Center. We've talked about this in the past. It's constantly being updated, and a couple of new updates in the networking space, which now I understand why Evan put them in there. He's our networking guy. But in the networking space, so you know that when we have services deployed in Azure, you know, we don't typically think of applying NSGs to all of our VNets and, you know, to control flow, right? We let them, you know, applications talk to each other. However, it's a best practice to put NSGs, but it's a pain in the neck to figure out exactly what what flow you're having between specific VNets and or subnets and apply those NSGs accordingly. And so now Azure Security Center has a feature called Adaptive Networking Hardening. And what it does is it monitors all the network traffic, and then it just tells you what NSGs to apply so that you can just take those and simply apply them to your VNet, you know, based on heuristics. And so I thought that was a cool feature. And then another thing is the network map that you see in Azure Security Center now even supports, you know, VNet peering. So if you have two VNets that appeared, I think previously it wouldn't show up. Now it shows up as part of the network map. So some nice updates there. I'm glad to see that team is still very active. Anything else that we want to cover before we talk to our special guests? I think it's a good roundup. So I want to thank Heiko and Ritesh for joining us today. I'd like for them to introduce themselves and then tell us what they're passionate about in Azure, and then we'll take it from there. So let's start with Heiko.
Okay. Thank you, Sujeet. Thank you for having us today. It's really a pleasure. I'm a frequent listener of your podcast. So my name is Heiko, and I'm a Premierfield engineer working for Microsoft in Germany, and yeah, mainly working in the Azure Stack space, working with customers who already bought Azure Stack, who already have Azure Stack in their data center, or at least planning to run Azure services in their data center.
Yeah. And Ritesh, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Sujeet. My name is Ritesh Ravi Kumar. I'm a consultant, so we have a bit mixed with Microsoft services. Focused on Azure and Azure Stack and taking all the goodness that we build on our platform and services to our customers and helping them envision their innovation or ideas on top of our platform.
Cool. Now, I know in the past, it seems like a long time ago that we've had some folks on the call talk about Azure Stack, maybe Charles Joy, I believe, had been on a couple of times, but it's been a long time. And, you know, it's been quiet since then, at least in terms of the news cycle for Azure Stack. So maybe you could just give our listeners a quick overview of what Azure Stack is, and then we can kind of take it from there. So one of you could pick that up, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. So I can start, and maybe Heiko can add. So Azure Stack essentially at its core is bringing Azure to our customers in their data centers, right? So we basically package it into a four node. And when I say node, it's four servers and up to 16 servers up to this point. And we deliver along with our partners to our customers who can simply buy that and consume the Azure services while running locally in their data centers. We have a few use cases primarily which customers look for when we talk about Azure services running in their data center as opposed to leveraging public cloud and scale. So it's basically about edge and disconnected scenarios where you do not have the capability to be able to go online and be connected and leverage the public Azure cloud. Also, in countries where they have strict regulatory requirements, government regulations there, where they need to meet them to be able to keep their data secure and on-prem. And also, finally, leveraging all the services that you don't typically get from the so-called private cloud and you know, all the goodness of DevOps. We spoke about DevOps. We spoke about app services, containers, every new innovation that comes to Azure, and being able to leverage them in your data center with Azure Stack.
Okay. I mean, that sounds really promising, but you know, you guys have used both the public Azure and the Azure Stack. Is the experience really very similar across both? Do you like from a user and from an administrative perspective? Is it a very similar experience, or what should they be kind of worried about?
So that's a really good point you brought up there. So from an end user perspective, probably the biggest difference is the different feature set. So Azure Stack has only a subset of features that are available in public Azure today. I mean, that's caused by the limited scalability today. It's caused by the fact that it's running in our customer data centers, for example. So there are some changes from a feature set and scalability perspective. From an operator perspective, it's a completely different story. So all of us who work with Azure in the past, we just consume subscriptions that are already pre-configured by Microsoft when it comes to quotas and all these things. And in Azure Stack, this is completely up to the end customer or to a service provider who's running Azure Stack on behalf of a customer. So the operators have to take care of power, cooling, they have to take care of the subscription management, designing offerings, and even installing resource providers, for example. So it's a completely different story, resulting in an additional portal. For example, in Azure Stack, you have an admin portal, which is, of course, not available in Azure because it's done by Microsoft.
Okay, that explains a lot.
So it's interesting that you mentioned scalability, because that's one of the biggest things that a lot of people move to the cloud. And when we're talking about Azure Stack, how does scalability or elasticity work?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, at this point, we start off with a minimum four nodes. So that's the bare minimum scale unit that you could purchase, and you could scale up to 16 nodes, right? So we've had a lot of conversation with our customers, some of them envisioning a real scale, real burst kind of scenarios where they need to scale and how public cloud scales. And it's really about fitment of your application. So there are applications which, like I mentioned earlier, would fall under a regulation or edge and disconnected scenario, and that's a right fit. And there are other applications which may not be enough. The scale that we provide between 4 and 16 is not apt for that application, and then they'll really look at public cloud as the option. So I don't know, Heiko, if you want to add something there.
Yeah, so this point is really, really good point, because this was probably one of the biggest challenges in the beginning, the limited scalability. And what we saw over the last months is that our product teams invested a lot of time and money into Azure Stack to improve the scalability. So what we have right now is we can start with four nodes, we can incrementally add nodes from 4 to 16, and I think it was during Ignite they announced that we'll see support for adding an additional scale unit, which is an additional cluster with 4 to 16 nodes. soon. So it's right now in development, but we expect it probably somewhere this calendar year.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I had a question on this, and this is going to be for maybe people who are somewhat new to Azure Stack, but as I'm thinking about the underlying hardware, and obviously because we're not running in a Microsoft data center, I mean, are we shipping Microsoft servers to them? Like, what can you just, you know, I want to make sure we don't skip any steps. How does this work if I say, okay, I need something that doesn't reach out to the public internet, which would be Azure Stack? Do I reach out to Microsoft and say, like what would the path forward be from the beginning? Is it our hardware that we send them, or that we send someone that manages it for them?
Yes, that's a very good point. So as of today, it's not Microsoft hardware, and it's a bit different compared to what Microsoft customers are used to. So today the flow is that our customers talk to their preferred OEM. We have different OEMs offering Azure Stack. So just to call a few of them, like HPE, Dell, Lenovo. So all major companies offer Azure Stack. And the typical process is that the customer reaches out to one of them and buys Azure Stack from our OEM. So it's really not buying your own hardware, building your whole infrastructure and installing something on top of it. So Azure Stack is a bundle. Azure Stack is an appliance-like offering where you have to buy a bundle containing servers, containing hardware, services, software, so the whole package.
Got it. And how quickly can they actually start to leverage it? Is it like, does it take a while for that to happen, for them to actually get access to the Azure services once they've made that decision?
I think the key thing is I want to bring in this differentiation there, right? And this is the value prop that our customers tend to like here. Traditionally, it used to be planning for your private cloud procurement and then actually building out, which can run out like months of projects, right? Spanning months, right? The project itself. So what we do here is the intention is to be able to for the customer to contact their preferred OEM and to be able to purchase the hardware and also the software that comes with it and start leveraging and consuming those services immediately. Having said that, it's really important, and this is what we see in the field all the time, it's really important for customers to go through a rigorous planning cycle, and they need to make sure they plan this right so that they can consume the hardware and the Azure services that comes with it from the day one, right, as the deployment completes. So the key factor here is about the planning that goes into it, and once the hardware is on site, there's minimal time the hardware engineer comes and sets up everything and it's ready to be consumed. So that's where the timeline is.
Great. I had a question too. You'd mentioned earlier around resource providers. So when customers are deploying Azure Stack, assume that whoever's configuring that would enable specific resource providers to allow different services to run on Azure Stack or be offered up. What about like things, because I'm very close to like our partner side and what our partners are building also that are available to like Azure Marketplace. How do those things end up on Azure Stack, or can they?
Yeah, so today when you deploy Azure Stack without any additional resource providers, you have all the fundamental services like infrastructure as a service with all the VMs, VM extensions, the whole networking story. It's more or less exactly the same story as it is in Azure. And on top of it, we have additional resource providers like, for example, App Service, which is more or less the same service we have in Azure today. Maybe from a feature perspective, a bit behind the public Azure version. And when you mentioned Marketplace, so in Marketplace, our ISVs can flag their offerings they provide through the Azure Marketplace as, working on Azure Stack, something like this. And we can see already a whole set of Marketplace offerings that work on Azure Stack. And the only difference is that an operator has to download them and offer them on Azure Stack. But from an end user perspective, it's more or less exactly the same.
That's great. Thanks.
I've talked to some of my customers about this before, and I'm just curious, what is the production story? I mean, do we have people running a lot of workloads using Azure Stack for their production environments? Like, what is our, you know, do we have a lot of consumers of this now? Is it still in the development stages? How would you classify where this is in terms of its maturity?
Yeah, I can start, and Haiku can add his experience as well. So we've been on this journey for some time now. So at this point, what we are slowly seeing is customers consuming it for their first workloads. Now, it can be in two different aspects, and we see both mixes in the field, right? It can be a migration because of an end of life of hardware that they're running. They're running this really old hardware. They want to get it replaced, and they consider Azure Stack as that option to be able to leverage the services and also the hardware replacement, right? And we're also seeing increasingly, and which is more, I would say, is about our dev test. So they would want to test out their not so business critical application first, and then they're doing that in that space, and they want to see, hey, what are the services? What are the limitations? How can I best use this? And this is all in conjunction with Azure, right? So that is where the real value prop is. So it's not just about consuming Azure Stack as standalone, which also could be the case, but then most of our customers are envisioning their hybrid applications, right? So parts of their solution, which are maybe, let's say, a database server running on-prem in Azure Stack, and like a web front end running on Azure. So they're seeing this hybrid options as well. So yeah, so we're seeing this phase where customers are starting to evaluate, and there's another set of customers who have gone through that evaluation and starting to put their first few applications in there and testing out.
Yeah, and just as an example for the standalone use cases, so from my perspective or from my experience, the best example is probably the defense sector. They're trying, they have use cases where scalability is not the biggest problem because they need mobile units, and Azure Stack is a perfect fit. They're already trying to do more or less exactly what Azure Stack offers them now, a predictive platform they can deploy in different geographical regions and different locations, and yeah, use modern services like infrastructure as code and Azure DevOps and so on.
That's cool. So I'm curious, so let's say we got this thing deployed at the customer's data center. Now, after that, does Microsoft take over the role of monitoring this system? Is there a pricing model that comes into play after this? How does all that work?
Yeah, so that's a very good question, Sujit. So when you think about two aspects there, right? So once it's deployed, how do we keep this thing with all the latest innovation that is coming? So yes, Microsoft is still responsible for what we call as through patch and update or PNU. To be able to bring in new services, to be able to do regular security updates, to be able to also provide optimization on existing services, so which we all that we bring in through PNU or patch and update, right? So that's how we keep the system update, and then we still support our customers to be on a monthly basis to be able to have that update. In terms of support, of course, that's another critical aspect for our customers is to be able to gain support if something goes wrong and they need additional help, right? So yes, we have support like Azure Services. Customers call us and call our support teams. They could call our support teams for Azure Stack issues as well. Key difference there is to be able to say, hey, Fabric-related and Azure service-related support is Microsoft, and since the hardware vendor is also in play, there's a hardware support managed by the OEM itself, right? And there's tight integration between these two. It's not like we're leaving customers trying to figure out where they should go. There's tight integration between OEM and MSFT to be able to provide that smooth experience for our customers.
Yeah, but what we, of course, cannot offer are SLAs, because we rely on the foundational things like power, cooling, and other data center-related things, maybe integration into existing identity providers and the customer's network, for example.
Yeah, that makes sense. Isn't there like an ongoing pricing that's involved? Like if I'm using services in Azure Stack, am I still paying Microsoft for consumption of those services, or how does that work?
We have two different models here. So our recommended model is the classic Azure pay-as-you-use model. So it's from a customer perspective, exactly the same. You spin up a VM, for example, and you have to pay for the VM. It makes it different if you're using Windows or not. And for the underlying things like storage, maybe networking, and so on. So really consistent with what we see in Azure. But for use cases where you do not have internet connectivity, the so-called disconnected scenario, there's only the capacity model where you have to pay per core. So you have to license the whole underlying infrastructure, which is pretty expensive, and it's usually not the preferred, not the recommended way. But in case you don't have internet connectivity, it's the only option.
So kind of following up on the internet connectivity, one of the other benefits of Azure or a lot of the public cloud is that there's geo redundancy or there's things like availability zones. So when one thing goes down, there's something else. But without network connectivity, what does that mean in terms of Azure Stack?
Yeah, so right now, due to the fact that we have only, as of today, this will change soon, that we have only a single scale unit within a single region. We do not have things like geo-redundant storage, for example. We do not have availability zones. We have availability sets, but they are limited to the scale unit we have. So the underlying architecture is a bit different than it is in public Azure. But there are third-party solutions out there, for example, from zero down to reach at least some kind of high availability across two Azure stacks, for example, in two different sites or two different data centers. But we'll definitely see new functionality, new features over time.
Heiko. So what is interesting is also the support for ASR that we announced, right? So customers for Longstar were asking for that. So the ability to use Azure Site Recovery or ASR to be able to back up to Azure and both ways, right? Azure to Azure Stack and the other way as well. So that is also a key feature that we've added to, so that customers can benefit out of it.
So I know we mentioned that there should be updates over time. What is our commitment for update cadence? How often are we adding services, and how can our customers be sure that this is something that we're going to invest in long term?
Yeah, so right now the plan is to ship an update every month. That's probably related to using Windows Server, and we have monthly update rollups. So we're not there yet. There's a really advanced testing and quality assurance process in place, which causes some months where we do not have an update. But the plan is really to have a monthly update from Microsoft containing all the security-related updates, as well as functional updates and feature updates. So a customer does not have to take care of updating the Azure stack components. So it's just a single update. They can install it in the connected mode directly through the admin portal, and they don't have to take care about the underlying things. For example, as of today, we're running Windows Server 2016 under the covers. This might change over time, and this will be part of an Azure stack update without the need for the customer to upgrade, for example, or migrate from 2016 to 2019, for example.
And the key thing that we want our customers also is to be able to be with us on this journey of innovation, right? So there's an N-2 that we support, and we also encourage our customers to be able to receive support and to be able to be in that N-2 window so that they are also running the latest and greatest that we are making available on Azure Stack, rather than we end up supporting and they also have been able to be going through legacy code or features that is months behind.
Now, I know you guys mentioned that there's basic IaaS, map services, et cetera, are supported today. What are some of the features that, more popular services that we can expect on Azure Stack in the near future?
Yeah, good point. So the latest announcements are from Ignite last year, I think, with all the things that are in development or in preview right now. And besides the already existing services, like all the foundational services and app service, we have, for example, Event Hubs and IoT Hub in preview. And we have a whole bunch of templated deployments, like, for example, Kubernetes Cluster using the ACS engine. I know it's not the latest and greatest. It's not AKS engine. It's using ACS engine. We do not have AKS today, for example, but even this is on our public roadmap as in development, and we'll see it hopefully soon.
So Event Hub is going to be pretty interesting. That's nice to have there. And of course, I'm sure we all love AKS, so looking forward to that. So, I mean, what are some of the pitfalls that customers have to worry about, right? I mean, you know, someone's using Azure in the public cloud and they all get, this is great. I got my apps all working here. I'm going to throw it on Azure Stack. Is it as simple as that?
So there are definitely considerations that customers have to go through, and that's part of part of the deployment. So if you were to split between Azure and Azure Stack, so as part of the deployment, there's careful planning that needs to be done, which we call as our data center integration process. And there are various mechanisms where we help. We have tool sets, we have other information that we make available for customers to be able to have that successful deployment itself. Once deployed, again, going with the consistent story, there are certain things that we ask our customers to look out for, right? So especially around for developer community, around the API version. So between Azure and Azure Stack, the API versions in Azure Stack are tad behind. So that's something that the developers and customers need to keep in mind while developing their solution, so that they do not look for the latest version that is running on Azure and then try to have the same on Azure Stack as well. So some considerations like that. There's real good documentations and that we provide around this to be able for them to consider this and plan their design with considering Azure as well.
Yeah, and it's a bit like working with the sovereign clouds in the past, like Azure Gov, Azure China, Azure Germany, for example. So there might be different API versions available and a subset of features, but these are things you have to take care of as a developer when you develop your ARM templates. Making sure that the services and the API versions are available on your endpoint.
And is Azure, is DevOps one of the features in Azure Stack? How do you do DevOps in there?
Yeah, so that's a very good point, and that's a huge ask, right? So just with Azure DevOps, with all the goodness that it brings, there's no change. Yeah, you could use Azure DevOps with Azure Stack as well. You could create your pipelines. You could have the pipelines deploy parts of the solution or the entire solution to Azure Stack as well. So there's an agent that you could agent pools, right? Like Azure offers agent pools for our customers to be able to run their code. You can have a local agent running on Azure Stack as well, and that's completely supported. So just extending that, it's not just a DevOps. DevOps is obviously supported. The whole tool sets and the framework, right, the management story and the other tool sets that work for Azure and customers are used to in terms of education and also what they use currently. The goal is to be able to make them available for Azure Stack with that in line. So there are a lot of these tools that work for Azure today, the same experience, consistent experience with tooling and management story as well.
Sounds like it's come a long way since we last spoke to some of the PMs on this. So really appreciate you guys giving us all these updates on Azure Stack. Any more questions for the guys before we let them go?
Yeah, I guess the one thing I would say is for our listeners out there, this has been an awesome amount of information. Maybe we could get some links from you guys on some of the most important kind of websites they can go to stay up to date for what's going on with Azure Stack and all the new features that are coming for it.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Just send them over to me and I'll add them to the show notes, along with the posting to this episode. Well, I want to thank both of you for taking the time. I know it's you guys are in various time zones and it's probably late or difficult. So appreciate you taking the time. And please, we'd love to have you guys on maybe in another year or so just to give us yet another update on Azure Stack as it continues its journey. alongside Azure.
Of course. Thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.